Hello, Twins fans. This is Chance Wool at TwinsTrivia.com, and I'd like to welcome you once again to another chat with a former Twins player. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with former Twins first baseman and pinch hitter extraordinaire Julio Baquer. Julio played for the Twins in 1961 and made an appearance in just one game in 1963, and you want to know what the circumstances were of that for sure. Previous to that, Julio played for the Washington Senators in 1955 and again between 1957 through 1960. After the 1960 season, Julio was drafted in the expansion draft by the LA Angels. Another thing that you need to know about Julio Baquer is that Julio was elected to the Cuban Baseball Hall of Fame in 1997. So, let's get with Julio now. So, Julio, you were born in Havana, Cuba. Can you tell us a little bit about Cuba and what it was like growing up there?
It was a beautiful island. It's tropical, and it's wide open and a lot of open spaces, and you have surrounded by the sea, so you're always in contact with water. Growing up in Cuba, I felt very nice because it's, like you say, it's not a big country. It's not with a large population. It's a large population. At the time I was there, it was only about between 6 and 7 million people. And they have 6 provinces. And in terms of growing up, again, it was very nice because we have schools to go and we have places to play, a lot of playgrounds, and in general, life was very nice. And
Did you play baseball growing up?
I did play baseball when I was a youngster in Fairlot baseball until I started playing, not organized, so kind of when I went to school, and when I went to secondary education, then I started out in my teens. And then when I went to college in one of the provinces in Cuba, have the University of Havana, and they have 6 colleges next to the University of Havana, but they are in the provinces. The 6 provinces and the 8 provinces have a college, which you get a teaching degree, and I get an agriculture teaching degree in this college. And I was playing baseball there, but not much. It's just nothing organized or anything like that. And when I finished school, I went to work with a construction company. There was specialized in highway constructions.
Okay.
And I was the paymaster in one of the provinces. And there I started playing again with some guys and after work for recreation. And a guy that played in the United States, Jesus Garcia, I know his name, he saw me play. And he kind of said, okay, you're thinking about playing baseball? I said, no. But in the winter in Cuba, they played the professional ball. They played the winter league with a lot of Americans and a lot of people that played in the minor leagues that play. And a lot of guys that even went in the reserve in the big league still playing in Cuba. So this guy talked to one of the people in Havana at the same time. That was the league that started there in the winter with all the reserve. Like here, they send the players to minor league, or they got a reserve that they send to this league to play.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys talked to the guys on Havana, and at the meantime, he asked me if I want to be, a reserve, if you want to sit on the bench or something like that. And I was playing first baseman. The first baseman got called to Havana and called to play in what we call the big league. So I said okay, and then he asked me if I want to play first. see the guys who were playing in the minor league, like they do here, that's in the scouts. And so Solomon, he asked me if I want to go to Havana and train with one of the professional clubs. And I said, that's okay with me. And I went to Havana, and again, and they saw me, and they fired me. They said, you want to be in the reserve? We give you so much money. I couldn't believe it. So I said, okay. So I went back to Pennsylvania Springs, and we will contact you again. So I went back to my work, and go back to the Winter Lake there in Santa Clara. That was the name of the province.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept working, and they still working on that. And I went back, and in the spring, I went back to Havana to practice with some of the teams. And Joe Cambria saw me, and I said, well, how do you like to play in the United States? I said, Jesus, you know. So, to make a story short, I say, I have to talk to my father, and I talked to my father, and my father said it was okay, there was an opportunity, and I quit my job, and then I went to when I signed with Cambria, and we could have played in the United States because at the time in Washington Senators, all the teams were in the South. And all the leagues were at the London League and the Saudi League, and all those leagues were not integrated yet.
Yeah.
So I went to play it in Drummondville, Canada, and that's what 1952. I played in the Canadian League.
Yeah. Did you get a signing bonus when you signed?
Signing bonus?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
$300.
Wow.
That was a lot of money
back then, that's for sure. So when you signed, you ended up going to Canada to play. Boy, that must have been kind of a change for you weather-wise, going from Cuba to Canada.
No, it wasn't a change. It wasn't that bad. This is Quebec.
Uh-huh.
And it's not, it's the weather and everything was very nice. It's a little town. I play in a little town in Drummondville. It's like a little old town with a big park in the center of the city and gazebo. It was a very, very nice little town. And the people were great. We were treated very, very nice. And they got it good ballpark. And the league was pretty, better than probably played in the States, because a lot of the guys that played in the Negro, they played in the Negro League, uh-huh. when they jumped to organize leagues in the United States, they couldn't play. The guys in the Negro League play in Canada. I played with guys like Hector Lopez, they were playing over there, Tracy Stollard, Charles, and there was a lot of those guys that played in that Canadian league.
Some good players.
Yeah, they were good players. They were good players.
Wow.
So that's what that league was very strong. That was very nice to be able, if you was going to go someplace in baseball and start it, that's the league would tell you, if you have, you have, you did.
Yep.
So that was, for that aspect, it was very, very good.
Very good. The following year, in 1953, you played Class B ball in Havana as part of the Florida International.
Yeah, Florida National League. We couldn't play in 1952.
Wow. So
we could have been playing in 1952, but in 1952, the Florida International League was not integrated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have to go to Canada. Most of our team, we were all Cubans.
Mm-hmm.
They was only got Cuban. We got two Americans, a catcher and one pitcher. But all the rest of them were Cubans. Most of us were black. We're black Cubans. So we went to, that's when we went to Canada. We were playing in Florida. Even that Cuba have a team in Florida, but the team was all white.
Wow.
Yeah. the amateur league started, I think it was integrated in the 50s.
Okay.
It was was a, yeah, the amateur, even the University of Ireland and all the education, they were, well, they were segregated.
Yeah.
But in 1954, then in 1954, they integrated the Florida International League. And then we have a team, almost the same team, we're playing it in the Triple A. So we jumped from Class B to Triple A.
Yeah.
Which usually we bypass A, Double A, and A, and Double A. So with that, again, we were exposed to more stronger ball.
And that team in 54 was the Havana Sugar Kings. They seem to have
Sugar King, I forget the name. The Sugar King was in 54, yeah. The Sugar Kings.
Yeah, they were. They had some good teams.
Oh yes, they had outstanding teams. Because in 1954, most of we have some Americans too. We have some older players that played winter ball in Cuba. They had a very strong team, and a lot of the guys too, not only for Washington, for other teams playing Cuba. They have an outstanding team in the 50s.
Mm-hmm. Okay. In 1955, you spent most of the season playing with San Diego in the Pacific Coast League, but that September you got called up and you made your major league debut as a pinch hitter on September the 15th at Griffith Stadium.
I think it was against Curry Johnson. I think it's played in Baltimore.
Okay.
If I recall, I don't recall that, but I think the pitcher was Curry Johnson, which I knew because he played for our team in Cuba and it was a ball.
What do you remember about your major league debut?
Well, don't remember much. I was just there for about. I didn't play much. I think it.
You pinch hit quite a bit.
I played quite a bit. I think I pinch hit. I did fair because I don't remember much, but usually. He was overwhelmed with, going from the Pacific Coast and all of a sudden you find your big league, and it was a tremendous experience, and, but I made it to the big league, so it's kind of
a big step.
A big step that usually at the end of the season you see in the greatest players, and I think we played against Boston that year. I played Boston. I get to see, some of the greatest at Williams and some of the greatest players. I mean, I was almost like, wow.
Yeah, I can understand that. A few days later, you got your first big league hit, a single to left. I think it was off of a pitcher from the Yankees by the name of Tom Morgan. Do you remember that?
Tom Morgan, yeah. Then I played in 19, as a matter of fact, in 1951, when I went to Los Angeles with the Los Angeles, dropped me from the Washington Senator. I saw Morgan. He was pitching for 1915 the team for the Angels.
In 1956, you spent the entire season with the American Association Louisville Colonels, but in 1957, you made the big league club, and you stayed with the Senators through 1960. Can you tell us about what those teams were like, Julio, and what kind of money you were making back then?
Well, I wasn't making that much money. I never made more than, I think it was $15,000.
Okay.
So that was my top salary. That's because I went to the Angel with Washington. My salary was $11,000 in 1960, and then I got to bump to about $15,000 when I went to Los Angeles. I can't recall. I think it was $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
And
those teams in Washington that you played on, what do you remember about them?
We had some good ball players. We had really good ball players compared with the Yankees at Boston. They have an outstanding group of players. But we have exactly in that year. Yeah. Remember, there was only 8 clubs.
Yep, yeah, a lot of baseball legends.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after the 1960 season, it was clear that the Senators were moving to Minnesota, but on December 14th of that year, you were drafted by the expansion Los Angeles Angels. What did you think of leaving the Senators, where you had spent your entire career, to go and play for an expansion team?
Well, if it was okay with me, I said maybe I had a chance to play regular, I had a chance to, you know, maybe... had a chance to prove if I, you know, I could have been a player. I was good enough to be in the big league, but I'm not good enough to play regular. I never had the opportunity to play regular field league, and so I said, well, maybe this is my opportunity. It's a chance. If I play in San Diego, so I did that with 290s arm and all that stuff. So I figured that, well, that was a chance. But when I get there, they draft Delco and they draft Kosuke. And then a couple weeks later, they draft Thomas, too. So I realized that I was out. That was going to be it.
Yeah.
So they sent me down to, which I was surprised, not really, but they sent me down to Buffalo. And I said, well, that faculty, I said, well, this might be the end of my career, or I have to think about, I don't know, I was very distressed about my career. But fortunately, about a couple of weeks later, the twin purchased my contract for Buffalo. They brought me back to the big league. Mm-hmm. So I was very happy because I was very happy because most of my friends were in the organization too, like the Batty and Camilo and Ramos and Valdivieso and Bisaya. So it's almost like coming back home.
Yeah, that was kind of nice. And you had a very memorable game on July 4th of 1961. And, you know, it's one of the Twins' highlights of all times.
It's one of my highlights, too, in my career, because that was the only home run that inside the grand slam that I hit in my career. I don't remember hitting another grand slam. Probably, but I don't remember. But I remember this one because that's the only one I hit in the big league. So that was really a thrill. I was on the 4th of July, and the whole bench hit 9 innings. We was losing. I think I don't remember what the score was.
I think it was 4-2 with 2 outs.
4-2 and 2 outs, and Joe, I think it's Morgan. I think the pitcher named Morgan pitching. I can't remember right now the name.
Yeah, I don't have that handy right now either.
So then in the second event, I hit the grand slam, and I was like, and then the second game, the Kirby hit inside the park one run.
Yeah,
that was a great.
That's kind of rare too.
Yeah.
No, that must have been a real great time for you. I remember when I was growing up and at that time, and I was listening to that game when that happened, so that's kind of a nice memory for me.
Mm-hmm.
You ended up spending all of 1962 in the minors with Mexico City and Vancouver, and then in 63 you were playing with Veracruz, and mm-hmm. when, as the story goes, Calvin Griffith called you and said that you needed one more game to qualify for a major league pension.
I needed seven days.
Okay.
Like 7 days to qualify for my pension. So it was nice. I was tremendous gesture of him to only purchase my contract, because he had to buy my contract from Veracruz,
mm-hmm.
and then bring it to the big league, and then release me after that. He couldn't send me back to Veracruz, and Veracruz wasn't going to, pay
mm-hmm.
pay back. So that was just spend money for that, and I went back to Veracruz another year. Then after that, I saw there was no future for me. My wife came back from Cuba in 61, and then we have our first child in 1963. Mm-hmm. So I took my baby to Mexico. Then after that.
Yeah. What was your relationship like with Mr. Griffith?
I got a very good relationship with Coffee. We all did have a good relationship with Coffee. As a matter of fact, 1961, when we decided, most of us, most of the Cuban here decided not to go back to Cuba because maybe the chances are we couldn't come back to the United States to play ball. So we decided to stay in the United States. Well, we decided to stay. Carbon arranged for us to get a visa to stay in to stay in the United States. So usually San Camilo and Camilo Ramos, my wife, and myself and Messiah at the time, and we all went to Canada and got a resident visa so we can stay in the United States.
Okay. I thought I read somewhere, or maybe, I don't know where I got it, but didn't Mr. Griffith help you bring your wife over from Cuba?
Oh, yes. So when I came back, I came back and my wife was still in Cuba, and I went to Carbon and I, you know, asked her, I would like to, you know, if it's possible, how I can arrange to bring my wife to the United States. And he said, fine. And I said, don't worry about it. And we don't talk again until that day to come in the office and your wife is coming.
Wow.
And I find out that the Joe Campbell, the scout that signed me, hang around with my wife, or took my wife almost to the embassy almost like every single day until he put my wife on a plane. He did that for about almost like a month. I hang around with my wife until my wife finally put my wife on a plane to my wife to come to the United States.
Well, that was great.
Yeah, and I don't know how he did it because he never asked me for I just gave him some information, but he's handled all the transplant, all the papers and whatever legal matter that was supposed to be done, and I ran all that, and my wife came.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned Joe Cambria, and you know, that was going to be one of my next questions. Is, you know, he was a famous scout, but some people said that Mr. Cambria was a great person, while others say that he took advantage of some of the players that he signed. What was Mr. Cambria really like?
We call him Papa Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta tell you, we call him Papa Joe. For Father Michael Sand, I consider him almost part of my family. I mean, Joe, maybe somebody will have a different world, a different experience. It happens. You always got the pros and cons. But for us, when we needed Joe, Joe was there. And some of us probably don't have as much talent to play baseball. But Joe signed us and sent us to the United States, and some of us become, you know, big league ball players. But others probably in other scenario, we probably didn't have these opportunities. And he helped a lot of people. So Joe signed hundreds of people that you can find that they're living in the United States and they have families and very, very successful individual, and that's because of Joe.
Okay.
And Joe, when somebody would need a Joe, anything, you would go to your office and you would find, you know, a dozen players at your office. And you would need something and you would go to Joe, and Joe would solve your problem. You have a problem, Joe was there to solve you, to help you.
Help you, that's great.
I mean, that's the Joe I know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always available, he was everywhere, he always had time. We call it Papa Joe.
Yeah, that's really.
That might be a reason why we call it Papa.
Yeah.
You talked about Tony, you know, his son Tony, and you had talked to Tony, you know, Tony Papa Joe.
Yeah.
Tony was, to us, was Papa Joe. Mm-hmm. We got a problem, we go see Papa with anything. We go there and talk to Joe.
Yeah, he had some good connections, apparently.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. You played for some interesting managers during your time in the big leagues, like Chuck Dresson and Cookie LaLaghetto and Sam Mealy. Who is your favorite manager?
My favorite manager was Cookie LaLaghetto.
Uh-huh.
But Charlie was a great grade manager. And he was very strict, down to the, and really was, again, they all went. Mealy and Cookie were good managers too, but a real nice individual too, real nice human being.
Okay. Can you tell us about 1961 when Fidel Castro basically ended professional baseball in Cuba and banned major league players from leaving Cuba?
There wasn't that many big league players at the time in Cuba. They were all practically all the majority of the players were here in the United States already.
Okay.
Because when it banned it last year, it was 1961. We all left. We beat up the team. We got back later, but we had to go to Mexico. We left to Mexico, but he gave us an exit visa, and we were Minoso and Camilo, Buddy Viejo, Bessayer. Well, we were about 30 of us. There's a lot of the guys in the minor leagues too, and Triple. You know, only the guys in the big league were the guys in the minor leagues. And we all have an exit visa to come to the third country. So we have to go to Mexico, and then from Mexico we stay in Mexico about a week, and then we came to the United States.
Can you share with us what was going through your mind when you had to leave your wife behind in Cuba to play Major League Baseball? I mean, weren't you concerned that you would never see her again?
Well, at that time, we didn't know. We know it was coming to the United States. There was a possibility, but we didn't know if we were going to be able to go. We'll be able to go back home.
Mm-hmm.
So at that time, we had doubts. We thought about that, but we don't think. Well, yeah, we'd probably be able to go back. Maybe we won't be professional ball. We won't be playing ball. And we go back.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, we find out that's a possibility that we go back. We won't be able to return to the United States.
Wow.
So that we made the decision later. It was for us. It was clear because by the middle of the season or so that we realized that our wife was in Cuba, and we don't know if they were going to let the wife, you know, come up to the United States, get a visa, you know, enter in the United States too, because they have to come as a digital visa. So, but they allow that too. So, most of the wives, some of the other players too, the wives came too also. And then they stayed, and then after the season we decided, chances are that we go back. That's a possibility that we won't be able to return.
Okay. Have you been back to Cuba since you left in 1961?
No, I haven't. I haven't been back. I haven't. Several times I go this year, I go this year, but always at the end, it changed my mind. And my wife went twice. My daughter went a couple times to my son's having. We've been planning for two or three years to go together, so we're still in that stage, so make that mind and they should go and see, because we don't have I have two sisters and two brothers, and I got two brothers in New York, but two sisters and two brothers, they're still here in Cuba, they're still in Cuba, so I would like to see them, because they're not all in their 50s right now, so. And I only have one uncle left for the media family, and not many cousins, but not many, so many, but
yeah,
uncles, and they're all gone.
Yeah, it probably will be quite an experience for you to go back. My parents came over here from Poland and Germany in that area, and so I had an opportunity to fly them back one time so they could go back to Poland where they were born.
Right.
And, they were very concerned about going back because at that time, it was still controlled by the communist regime of you know, Russia and so forth. But, you know, they went back and, you know, they enjoyed the opportunity to see their homeland again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife and my daughter went, and they'd have a good time. I mean, they saw their family. Because at that time, my wife got it from, you know, got sisters and brothers, and my daughter got a chance to meet the uncles and great uncles and so on. It is really, they didn't see much of Cuba, but they didn't have any problem, and they went everywhere and just hang around with family, just visit with family. It was only 2 weeks, you know, that 2 months, Sonny. 2 weeks, they all lived, one family lived in Havana, the other lived in the provinces. You go to the province, so we don't have too much time to travel in around. So, but they did have a good time, and they didn't have no problem whatsoever. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed the visit, and I think they went back twice. My wife went, at the third time, I wanted to go back, so he died before.
Mm-hmm.
He had the chance to go back to the third time, and that's the chance too that I was thinking about going back with her.
I see. You played with Pedro Ramos, and there's a lot of stories surrounding Pedro. Would you like to share some of those for our listeners?
Pedro was a free, you know, a free thinker individual. He's I don't know how to put it in words, but you have no carry in the world.
Uh-huh.
Pedro was a happy guy, and he's still a happy guy, and he still enjoy life, and he's not too sure about probably a lot of things, but he's still a good individual. You know, he never have any problem, and a good friend. It was fun to hang around with, and I played with him for 8 years together, and in Cuba we played more than that, but he was him and Camilo was just something together, was like brothers, because Camilo, well, they played together all the part of the big league career. So Ramos got traded to in the later days.
Yeah,
he went to the Yankees, and Camilo, I think he went to I forget where Camilo went when he left here, when he went to Twins.
He ended up with a couple different teams. When you played, who do you think was the best baseball player that you ever saw?
It's tough to say what was the best ball player.
Okay.
I mean, here I see Mickey Mantle, and I saw Ted Williams, and then I saw Art Aline. And what else? That was in American League. But I saw Jackie Robinson play when I was in the speed training and everything. And I saw, and let's see, I go and the guys like let's see, I just got in my mind right now. I can go like Boog Robinson.
Yeah.
I go to Frank, was in the National League, Frank Robinson, and so many. You can't say one specific guy. I mean, they were great ball players.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if this guy was really better, it's the definition of best, better, and
how do you separate, how do you quantify? Yeah.
He would say, well, if Aaron was better than Mantle, if Mantle was better than that Kaline, or
yeah.
Each individual himself was a great ball player.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of pitchers too, a lot of pitchers. I mean, if they're in the Hall of Fame, but you look at an individual, and you look at the greatest of these individuals, if this guy was greater than that guy, greater than this guy, maybe a little bit, but that quantification makes you say he's one of the greatest, like greater than Babe Ruth.
Yeah.
Well, if he throw better than somebody else, that he hit the ball, he hit a lot of home runs, but he was a better fielder.
Yeah.
He was a better runner.
Yeah.
So all the qualities.
Yep.
Throwing, fielding, running, all of that. And you look at the well, for instance, you look at Bobby Bonds, but he just
recently the Twins, or this year, they opened up their new ballpark at Target Field. And when you played with Minnesota, you played at Met Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about that stadium?
Well, I inaugurated that stadium in 1956. In 1956, when I played with Louisville.
Oh.
The
American Association.
The American Association. American Association. They have the Millers and the Saints.
Yep.
The Millers in Minneapolis and the Saints in St. Paul. Look, at that time, it was a very nice, well, still it was a good stadium. It was a nice stadium to play in.
Yeah.
Well, the other in St. Paul. St. Paul was a kind of an old stadium, city-wise.
Yep.
But the Mets was a very, very nice stadium.
Okay. Well, you had an opportunity to see some of the games the Twins play at the Metrodome. What did you think of that as a baseball field?
It's a nice field, but it's indoor. I never saw the team playing indoor. I don't know the indoor ballpark, but it's different. It's a different game. It's a different game. It's a fish of toilet. I don't know what I got a chance to play a couple of times in Felicia there one time. It's different. It's looking at the balls. It's essentially fly balls.
Yeah.
And the fly balls on the ball carrier on the turf, when you hit the ball, the ball's kind of skip. You're watching a different game. You try to watch the game, but you're watching a different game than what you would watch right now. It's entirely different game. So.
Yeah. You played in the 1950s and the early 60s. If you could have played baseball in a different era, what would that be and why? Or do you think that you played in the best time of all?
I don't know. I think it's a hard question to ask.
Yeah.
I wasn't an average player. So I don't think for me, I don't know if I play in the old, you know, it's a hard question for me to answer because I wasn't that great a player. I have good abilities to do. I wasn't average hitter. I wasn't great fielder. I could run very well. I could throw very well, but I wasn't that great a hitter. And I think for me, probably any hitter would make any difference. And we're talking about six. We're talking about 16, and we have 18, and then the athletes have developed, have a greater development, in the 60s, and the reason that right now, before, each team was composed of a star, and it's, which right now with so many teams, each team don't have, we have four or five really, really great players.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to say because the qualification of the team, you got 25 players before, and then you have 15 teams. So now maybe a lot of players they don't play in the big league. They're playing the big league right now. They have a talent, but they didn't have a chance to develop the talent because there wasn't that many teams to play. Now there are more teams. Now they have more opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they have, and you go around, it's more organized. So the play has more time to develop than it was in the old days.
Okay.
It's the change in the era, it's a change.
Yep.
It's like when you were back in the athletes back in the Olympics run out and you look at what it was before, you had the guys breaking records and all of it. So it's just the... For me, it's pretty hard. I know that.
Yeah.
Be able to really ask that correctly.
Yep, I understand that. Julio, what do you think about the steroids and the human growth hormone situation, and what are your thoughts on what, if anything, should be done with the records that have been set during this time frame?
Well, I don't think the records should be abolished. I mean, I don't think I don't think is right, but again, it's hard to say that they took, they know they were wrong, they know what they were doing was wrong.
Yeah.
It's refighting, refighting out of how you put a weapon in that. So it's not, I shouldn't use that, it's completely wrong.
Yeah.
They're completely wrong. They got wrong. They know what they were doing. They know they were cheating. So I don't think anything that they've done, they should be recognized.
Yeah. What about the players like Bonds and McGuire and Palmeiro and others? That, do you think they belong in the Hall of Fame?
No, they don't.
Okay.
They don't belong in the Hall of Fame.
Fair enough.
But it don't belong. They know what they did.
Yeah.
They know what they did. They know what they did was wrong. They weren't fair. They weren't playing fair. They don't use equal. So I don't think that they should be recognized, or the record should be. That the record, but it just should be in any way or form recognized.
Okay. Yeah. And I tend to agree with you. The designated hitter rule came in after you retired, but if the DH was in existence when you played, how do you think that would have impacted your career?
Oh, I think it would have impacted. I think it could have played quite a few more years. And one of my problems is too that I was not a big guy. I was about 6 feet tall, and I weighed about weighed about 168, 170 pounds.
Uh-huh.
So it wasn't big enough. And then by playing winter ball, playing winter ball and playing in a tournament, I wasn't that really strong. So I started very well, and then after that, I get weaker. So I'm not.
Sure.
I have no power. I can hit the ball once in a while. I can hit it. My case is I can hit the ball. I can hit the ball very well, but not the long way. So I don't know if I'm playing first base. So my playing time was limited. But you're always going against guys that can hit 20, 30 home runs at the first baseman.
Yeah.
I didn't hit with power. And I was one of them. I can run well, I can throw well, I can feel well. But as a hitter, I was average. Now, maybe two in the big league, I never hit more than 260 something. And I think if you really had a chance to play well, I don't think I could have hit maybe around 280, 290.
Okay. Do you like the DH rule?
Oh, yeah. I like the DH, but giving opportunities. A lot of guys won't be playing on the field to at least do well at hitting.
Yeah.
A lot of guys get older, so that's an opportunity. There's a lot of guys that they are not well on the field, but they can still get it. There's a lot of guys on the well field, but they can hit. So that's the opportunity for them to play.
Yeah. You ended up, when you were in the big leagues, you ended up pitching on two different occasions,
mm-hmm.
once as a Senator and once as a Twin.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about those?
Well, I did have a good arm. I did, like I said, I can throw very well. And in those days, we pitched batting practice almost like every day. We pitched batting the two of the players, the bench players. So we pitched to each other on practice, and
mm-hmm.
and we pitched to each other almost like every day. So we had there when we practiced, we pitched to each other. So I pitched batting practice. Well, when the left hander was pitching, so I pitched batting practice to the regular.
Wow.
So if we can throw pretty good, we pitched batting practice to the regular. That's why a couple of times in Kansas City and a couple of times with one of those games that gets out of hand, instead of to use, remember in those days we played double headers on Sundays.
Sure. Yeah.
So we played in cases like Kansas City or Chicago when it's hot and you use four or five pieces, you don't want to use your reliever. So you bring, so there are players like, I think Gladys pitched one time too for the Twins.
Yeah.
Pitched one time. So you list one of the players, you tell the player as a pitcher, so he can pitch. So then it goes right there, and you can pitch.
that must have been a fun experience, though.
Well,
for
it was
you.
It was, I never thought of it. Yeah. I never thought I could be Puerto Rican. I don't do too well. I thought I could throw the ball pretty hard, but the guys can hit it, the harder they throw, the harder they hit.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's for sure. Did you have a nickname when you were playing, Julio?
No, I got Julie.
I'm sorry?
Julie.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see here. What did you do after you were done as an active player?
I went to work for the Dayton Company. I got a job with the Dayton Company.
Okay.
Here in Minneapolis, in St. Paul. I decided to retire, and pretty soon I retired one day, and I went to downtown, and parking the ramp, and that was where the Dayton was, the store was located.
Sure.
So I went down, and the person at the department, and asked for a job, and they gave me a job.
All right.
And I spent 30 years with the company.
Wow. That's pretty nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a good career. I got a good career, and I become a manager and a buyer, and so I did very well.
Great, great. Do you follow baseball in the Twins today?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I follow it all the time, yeah.
Okay.
I do the baseball cleaning during the summer.
Okay.
I do baseball cleaning around Minnesota and Iowa. We go out to Wisconsin, with kids.
Yep.
Baseball clinics and all that with a group of guys that we go to do every weekend, and we do somewhat connected. I do it for the community fund.
Yeah, and that's the Twins Community Fund. That's very nice, and gives you an opportunity to teach, some of the younger kids how to play the game.
Well, I enjoy it. I retired in 94, so I was really fine. I don't completely retire, so when they have that Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani started that in 40, 50, when it was Twins from the starting, and there was a lot of guys involved. They've been doing that for a long, long time.
Yeah, it's you take part in the Twins Fantasy Camp in what, in January too, don't you?
January, yes. Mm-hmm.
And do you enjoy that?
I enjoy that very much. There's a lot of the old guys got cancer with their body because they're disease right now, and then most of the guys, Cat, Kitty Boo, and the new guys too, Viola, Kevin, and Coomer, and a lot of those guys that come to the Fantasy Camp.
Yep.
It's kind of nice. It's almost like a yearly reunion. Well, all the guys, Quincy, Boswell.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of.
I'd like to participate in one of these times, but haven't scraped together the money for it yet.
Well, you can even come and just watch. That'd be just enjoyable.
Yep.
I mean, you won't be able to play, but yep. you'll be sitting around, and it's open. I mean, everybody can. We use the same facility as the Twins. We use the same park.
Yep.
And then over there, and it's wide open, and anybody can come to the game.
Yeah.
So we got it. You probably have some people that you know. It's kind of a nice week. It's a very nice week to spend.
Yeah, and sounds good. Well, Julio, thank you so much for your time
welcome.
Today, and for your time today, and for all the great memories of watching you play. Do you have any thoughts that you would like to share with all your fans out here in Twins territory?
Put you on the spot.
Hello? Yes, it just kind of puts you on the spot there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the fans have been, throughout the year, the fans have been very, very nice to me. So I would like to thank all of them for always, what we were there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to all of them. Thank you very much for their assistance.
Yeah. No, they, thank you for all the great times that you provided for us.
Thank you.